You know, we're all human beings. We all suffer, don't we? But sometimes most of this suffering is unnecessary. It can be overcome in a remote moment. I like that, in a remote moment. Russell Targ, our guest. You're going to love this show on Coast to Coast AM. Russell Targ, a physicist, author who is a pioneer in the development of the laser. He was the co-founder of the previously secret Stanford Research Institute's investigation into psychic abilities in the 70s and 80s. He did graduate work in physics at Columbia University. He's the co-author of 7 books dealing with the scientific investigation of psychic abilities and the transformation of consciousness. Most recently, The End of Suffering, A Guide to Fearless Living. Targ retired from Lockheed Martin Missiles and Space Company as a senior staff scientist, where he developed airborne laser systems. He now pursues ESP research in Palo Alto, California. He is our special guest tonight on Coast to Coast. Russell, always a pleasure to have you on the show, my friend. How are you?
Thanks. I'm very happy to be with you this evening.
Lots of things you've been working on lately, I see.
Well, you get to be old enough, you get to do a lot of different things.
You know what, though? Somehow, when you get involved in psychic research, I think your mind tends to stay young. Do you find that to be the case?
I think that's true, because you get to experience the spaciousness, which pulls you away from the everyday drag and everyday fears. And just as you came on with your introduction, I'd been doing remote viewing and teaching remote viewing for 30 years. And this book that I just wrote, The End of Suffering, could really be called Why Bother with ESP?
Well, I couldn't put it down. You not only illustrate how to fight, you know, through the, oh my gosh, the troubles of our times, but you make people feel good. And that's the important thing. And you've somehow tied it all together with your life experiences.
My experience was that I got to sit in the dark at Stanford Research Institute teaching all kinds of people how to get in touch with the part of themselves that's psychic. We developed remote viewing. We were taught by Ingo Swann. Ingo Swann taught my partner Hal Puthoff and me how to expand our awareness and describe what's happening in the distance and in the future, how to describe and experience things that are blocked from ordinary perception. And Ingo is a great psychic I'm sure you've had on your show.
Mm-hmm.
And Ingo taught us. Hal and I then chose half a dozen men from Army Intelligence at Fort Meade, Virginia, and we taught them how to do remote viewing, and they then taught the world. So remote viewing is a growth industry right now in a couple of regards. If you go to the internet, you may be surprised to know that you'll find 1.5 million sites dealing with remote viewing, or 1.5 million pages dealing with remote viewing. And the reason is that remote viewing is actually very easy to teach. So what happens is that I teach somebody, and they say, that wasn't very hard, and they then sit up and start to teach it. So like in medicine, where a young doctor sees an operation, does one, and then teach. You see one, do one, and teach one. And you now have hundreds of people all over the country teaching remote viewing. And what cheers me up right now is that I've been teaching remote viewing in classes and workshops for about 30 years. And what I observe is that people are catching on quicker and are doing better and better.
Why is that?
Well, it's sort of like the 100th monkey idea, or Rupert Sheldrake's notion of morphic resonance. Partly, it's more acceptable to do remote viewing, that we've overcome the weirdness quotient as you've got millions of sites in the internet dealing with remote viewing and many books dealing with remote viewing. What I observe, without a doubt, is that even in introductory lectures, people are just more psychic. Now, I had noticed in Italy that my classes were way better than the Americans, and the Americans are catching up. I'm telling them, just pretend you're Italian, and that seems to help them.
Russ, I got a kick out of one of your books, Limitless Mind, where you have a brief mention of my aunt, Dr. Shafika. And did you know her well? I know she knew Ingo well, did you know her?
Is it Shafika Karagula?
Yes.
I had met her. I didn't know her well, but I knew that she wrote this. I had read her wonderful book about
breakthrough to creativity.
Creativity, but intuitive diagnosis. And one of the interesting things that I've discovered is that intuitive diagnosis is actually easier to do than remote viewing, and we can talk about that later. But to get back to how a physicist happened to write a book on the end of suffering, what I discovered from helping all these people at SRI learn to do remote viewing is that you catch on to the idea that you couldn't possibly be just a physical body. Now, I spent a decade sitting in the dark. It's as though my spiritual awakening was paid for by the CIA.
Right, that's a good point.
We had this kind of psychic hide-and-go-seek game we would play where I would interview people, government scientists, right up to the Undersecretary of Defense. I would interview him about his impressions, what he sees on his mental screen with regard to where we had taken his buddy, some randomly chosen place in the San Francisco Bay Area. So I spent a lot of time with my eyes shut sharing a visualization with the viewer of the day. And how well this person did determined whether or not we got funded for the next year. So when we had the undersecretary come, he came into the laboratory and said, "Well, I know you're going to do a demonstration for me. Who's the psychic here?" And I said, "You are, sir." He said, "I don't even believe in this stuff." And our strength is, as scientists, we said, we really are not into belief. We're into good data. We will just show you how to do it. And when you go back to Washington then, sir, you will have your experience of remote viewing rather than our story about what happened in the laboratory.
Russell, why in the heck did they drop the program? I mean, the money they have wasted on other programs, other kinds of weaponry, we could have really perfected this. Why did they do that?
I think you're right that we could have perfected it. We were doing very well. And in fact, the Russians are still doing it. But the CIA, in their wisdom in 1995, decided that we no longer had any enemies. America no longer had any serious enemies. And we didn't need the remote viewing program. Now, you see, the CIA took a lot of heat from a variety of people. There were congressmen of the Proxmire variety who said, "I simply don't believe in psychic stuff." And within the CIA, there were religious fundamentalists of several persuasions who said, "Of course psychic stuff goes on, but it's from the devil," and they also made problems for us. So it was, by 95, the end of the Cold War had occurred, the Berlin Wall was down, and it was just easier to sweep us away than to continue argue to support the psychic spies.
You don't think that they basically moved your group out and brought another group in and continued with some kind of black ops program, do you?
I don't believe that. Of course, the program was top secret when I belonged to it. So it's certainly possible that in the basement of the Pentagon, there's some people who continue the X-Files. We really were the X-Files at Stanford during the period that I was there carrying on this program. Now, you realize we had a program that was continuously funded by CIA and Defense Intelligence Agency. We were funded for 23 years doing more or less the same thing, providing information to a wide variety of government agencies on everything from Chinese atomic bomb test to kidnapped American generals, and we can talk about that later. But we were, on the one hand, a scientific group publishing things in Nature magazine and the Proceedings of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. That's on the science side. But on the other side, we were quite operational, month after month, providing operational information that was acted upon to various government agencies. So we, I realize that there's still people who don't believe in psychic abilities or think it was all some kind of error, but we were quite an effective organization. And in a sense, the best evidence for the efficacy of psychic ability is that year after year, the government kept giving us money to provide them with more or less the same kind of information that we did each year. And if we were telling them nonsense or erroneous stuff, they just tell us to go to hell because they were taking heat for supporting a bunch of psychics in California. It would be very easy for the CIA to have dropped us, but they didn't drop us because we were valuable.
Were you guys publicized at the time? Did people know beyond the CIA, truly know, what you folks were working on and how you were trying to do remote viewing?
They knew we were doing remote viewing because I'm basically a physicist, and I had no intention of becoming a psychic spy for the CIA and disappearing. So the deal we made with the devil, Hal Puthoff and I, who are both laser scientists, is that we would promise never to mention your name, the CIA's name.
Right.
That was the most classified part of the program, and we wouldn't describe what we were doing for the CIA, but we would publish and describe how remote viewing worked, because the psychic abilities are so remarkable and so in tune with the hottest parts of modern physics that we didn't want the whole scientific endeavor to get swept under the rug. And John McMahon, who was the director of intelligence at the CIA at the time, highly intelligent, creative lawyer, intelligence operative, agreed with that. He said that if you can really do what it appears you're doing, we'll support your program and let you publish the scientific part and keep secret, or top secret, the classified part. And the reason it was top secret is that we were making use of satellite images to confirm what we described during a time when that was highly classified.
Pravda, just a few weeks ago, Russell, talked about how the Soviet remote viewers attempted to try to spy on U.S. presidents, almost to the point to look over their shoulders to see what they were doing, in the Oval Office. Do you believe that to be the case?
I absolutely believe that, because we were doing similar things. I spent there's really two parts to it. The Russians were more interested in behavior modification. The Russians were interested in remote viewing, but also in can you make a person appear stupid, or can you drive him crazy, or can you strangle him at a distance?
Or give him a heart attack, maybe.
That's right. So the big effort in the Soviet Union in remote behavior modification at the time that we were interested in remote viewing and inflowing information. But go ahead.
Did all of you, Ingo and Hal and yourself and others, ever concentrate on some Soviet official to try to get him to die or keel over and die of a heart attack?
No, that was not our style at all.
Okay.
What I was going to mention is that I spent an engaging full afternoon working with our great psychic, Hella Hammond, looking or spying on Brezhnev's Kremlin office was the target. And Hella was a New York photographer and a good friend of mine who we brought in as a control. The CIA wanted us to... We had worked with Ingo Swann and Pat Price, the psychic policeman.
Sure.
Who are both well-known as prodigious psychics and did wonderful things for the CIA during our program. But they wanted to see, can you find somebody who promises that they weren't psychic, just a regular person? And Hella was very presentable, a charming beautiful, talented, cultivated woman of the world could go to anybody's tea party. And she thought it was very humorous that we were paying her to be a psychic spy. And it turned out that she became the most reliable person on the program. She wasn't the best artist or the most psychic, but day in and day out, she was the journeyman person that we could always count on. And one afternoon, we were targeted on Brezhnev's Kremlin office. So she and I just sat across the table making a long tape recording and drawing of what it was like to walk in the doors, what you saw in the office, how there was a secret passage going down into a lower floor, how the front door of the office was padded with red leather, studded with upholstery tacks, which we thought was quite bizarre. And she drew all that. And then 4 years later, when I left the program, I went to Russia as a guest of the Soviet Academy of Science, and I was absolutely stunned to be shown Brezhnev's office, and there was the red leather door,
oh my,
just as Hella had drawn it. And very few of us have ever seen an office door padded with red leather, studded with brass upholstery tacks, but that was the decorative way that they soundproofed this office.
Well, I tell you, Russell, Bill Burns and I, my co-author in my book called Worker in the Light, quote you and Ingo Swann quite heavily in a chapter or two, because you're the best at this. There's no question in my mind. Is it getting stronger, remote viewing? I mean, you talked about the fact that newer people who try it tend to pick up on it better, but is it continuing in a big way, or is it kind of fading away?
It's definitely not fading away. I thought you were going to ask me the hard question, are people becoming more psychic? And I don't really know that. See, in a certain sense, I'm not teaching remote viewing. What I'm really doing is giving people permission to make use of their psychic abilities that they already have. It's as though I told you that it's possible to ride a bicycle with one wheel and no handlebars. And you say, well, that's the craziest thing I ever heard of. It would fall over backwards, forwards, and sideways. That's a stupid, who would ever be able to do that? And then as soon as you saw somebody ride by on a unicycle, it instantaneously became possible. You wouldn't need a lot of persuasion. And you would then go and learn how to do that, and you would then pursue it. And I hadn't really taught you how to do it. I had just shown you that it was possible. And that's really what I do in, I teach weekend workshops rather than lengthy week-long or month-long classes. I'm a facilitator who I can show people the moves. I can almost always give people an experience of psychic functioning, which is why people like my classes and why it's fun for me. It's rewarding for a teacher. I used to do magic when I was in college.
Oh, did you? Okay.
And it's as though I now have a very reliable magic trick where I can stand before a group of people where they all have their own individual pictures hidden in envelopes, and I can, like a Tony Robbins action figure, I can cheer them on, tell them they can do it, give them permission, tell them I expect them to succeed, and what do you know, they can actually describe the picture. So there's no hypnosis or strobe lights or drugs. I'm just forcefully telling them that I expect them to succeed, just as I had done with government scientists and even people in the Soviet Academy of Sciences.
Russell, stay with us. We're going to come back. I want to take the final half hour here, at least on the subject of remote viewing, and then next hour we'll talk about the incredible book, The End of Suffering. And then the last hour we'll take your phone calls with one of the world's foremost remote viewers who has gotten us into a pretty fascinating area, next on Coast to Coast AM. You know, Christmas is only a few months away, and it's time to start thinking about the perfect gift for your favorite Coast to Coast AM friend. How about the After Dark newsletter, where you get 14 issues for the price of 12? You can call 1-888-727-5505 or simply go online at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Russell Targ, our guest. Russell, you were talking about kidnapped American generals and the quest to remote view that. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, that was General Dozier, who was kidnapped by the Red Brigade in 1980. And Joe McMonigle was the hero of that exploit, because Joe had been an Army intelligence officer, and he actually knew the city of Padua because he'd been there. So when Joe drew a map, visualize the city, you could say, I see the river here and the building there, and it looks like they're in the downtown area. I recognize the corner. I see the building where he is. Go and get him. They're at that building. And we learned from Interpol that they followed Joe's instructions and went to exactly the right place, and that's where Joe Dozier was being held captive.
My gosh, did they ever tell Dozier what happened, how they found him?
I think that it was a cooperative effort. We were working with Interpol, and it was a combination of us and the police. But Joe, of course, had completely independently found where he was.
You know, Russell, there are some...
And people can learn to do that. That is, remote viewing is generally a non-analytical ability. But if you know something about the location, then you can add in your intellectual capability together with whatever comes to you psychically.
And what would be a successful percentage of hits? Let's say out of 10 tries, if you hit, six or seven of them, is that considered, hey, you know what, this person could be a pretty good remote viewer?
Six or seven would be fantastic, and that's what we saw with our psychic team at SRI. And when we had the six completely inexperienced people we chose from Fort Meade, we did 36 trials with them, and half the time they got a first-place match on describing where people were hiding, which is hugely significant, a publishable result. That is, if I asked you to describe where I was hiding in a city you had never been, and half the time you gave an excellent description, that would be quite remarkable.
Some people claim that they can remote view into the future. Is that possible at all, or is remote viewing just done basically in real time, events that are going on right now?
It's definitely possible into the future. I have some description of that on my website. Can I give my
Absolutely,
email?
Russell.
Because people are beginning to pop up on my screen. if you want to write to me, I'll correspond with anybody who writes to me at espresearch.com. So that's all there is, www.espresearch.com. And I have all sorts of interesting things on my website about how remote viewing works and our psychic exploits and so forth. And you can write to me, and I'll answer questions.
All right. Explain, Russell, then, how some people can remote view the future. How does that work?
We can all remote the future because we live in a non-local universe. Now, this was understood in the 1920s. My great hero, Erwin Schrödinger, who perfected quantum mechanics, was the first person to talk about non-local connections and things being intertwined one with the other.
Yet the future...
Quantum interconnectedness. And what we know now is that a result of living in a non-local world is that it's no harder to describe something across the planet than it is across the street. Similarly, it's no harder to describe something on tomorrow's New York Times than it is to describe an object on my desk. So the most remarkable thing about a non-local world where we live is the future and the distance are available to us, and it's not limited to some handful of very special people. If you can learn to remote view the picture in the envelope, then you can remote view the picture that I'm going to show you later on. And in fact, one of the things that I do in a workshop is I say that I have several objects here in my little bag of tricks, and I'm going to show one to you at a later time. I want you all to make a drawing of what I'm going to show you, and everybody will draw whatever appears in their mind's eye. They have no idea what it could be. It could be anything at all, because I have all kinds of weird stuff that I carry around with me through airport security. And everybody will draw their own individual weird thing, and then I get someone to throw a die on the floor, and it'll come up some number like 3. You knew I was going to say that, right?
Yes, I did.
And then I will pull out bag number 3 and show them that what I have is a hourglass or a alarm clock or a telephone or a bottle of wine or whatever it is. And then I will say, who drew anything like that? And some large number, let's say I had a bottle of wine. And like, who saw something that was made of glass and cylindrical? A huge number of people will hold up their hand. And I'll say, well, I could have had a teddy bear. Who saw a stuffed animal? And my experience lately is no one holds up their hand. So what I'm finding is that people have more and more success with this kind of remote viewing trick, where I will say, describe what I'm about to show you, and they're able to do that remarkably well. And I can't fool them that I pulled out the thing, showed them what I had, and people could say, that's nonsense, I didn't see anything like that, but they don't. They want to rush up to the stage and show me their drawings of the bottle of wine or the teddy bear or whatever it was that day. So what I'm finding is that, as Sheldrake would teach us, that once, well, I don't want to, the 100th monkey sounds a little insulting, like the 100th psychic, as it becomes more and more acceptable worldwide, then people do better and better in their remote viewing into the future. And it's very important, the fact that we know that that remote viewing is non-local is that one of the things that has been found for 50 years is it is absolutely no harder to know the future than it is to know the present, absolutely no harder to know the far distance than the object I've got in my pocket. And that's what a physicist means by a non-local connection.
As far as the future, though, how can psychics and remote viewers predict or see the future when the future hasn't happened yet, or has it?
Well, we're in contact with the future. The idea that you're able to see the distance because there's no actual, there's no separation between us and the distant event. Similarly, in a non-local world, there's no separation between us and the future event. Now, I believe in causality. I believe that we live in a deterministic world, which makes it easier. That as a physicist, I'm constrained to believe that events have causes. I think most people will agree to that. But you have a certain small amount of free will, not much, much less than you think. And the amount of free will you have is determined by how great your ability is to get off of the ordinary mundane plane, the real plane, and move into the complex space-time where remote viewing takes place. The reason remote viewing works is that our awareness is able to move through space-time and experience things in the distance or in the future. You mentioned earlier Limitless Mind as well as The End of Suffering, and the difference between those two books is a very Buddhist idea about quieting your mind, about mindfulness. That there are three aspects of mindfulness that I like to talk about. There's transcendent knowing, which is remote viewing, where you inflow information about the future. Limitless mind tells you everything you want to know about finding your car keys, finding a parking place, predicting the future, investing in the stock market. It's very pragmatic description of just what we did at SRI. So The limitless mind, it's about transcendent knowing. The end of suffering is about transcendent doing, which is using your intentionality to heal the sick, release pain, and transcendent being, in which you're able to move yourself into the spaciousness and away from the things that make you suffer. So limitless mind is about learning to do remote viewing. If you want to be psychic, you want to invest in the stock market, that's something that can be done, and we can talk about that later. If you want to use this ability to quiet your mind and end your suffering, then the end of suffering is the way to do it. Depending on whether you're interested in transcendent knowing or transcendent doing.
I got a call yesterday during one of my open line calls. Russell, you can answer this question for him better than I could yesterday, because he asked an interesting question. He said, we use our eyes to see, yet in remote viewing, it's as if you still see without your eyes. How can that be? I really didn't know how to answer it.
Well, Kenneth Ring, the psychologist you probably know, has done near-death experience work, has found that people who were congenitally blind are able to do remote viewing. It's as though they experience these things on their inner screen, which I find quite surprising. But even Helen Keller, who had not seen things, was able to describe things visually that she had handled and had experienced. So it's clear that remote viewing is beyond what you're able to see. That as Charles Leadbeater was able to describe atoms, this great theosophist of the early part of the 20th century, was the first person to talk about isotopic materials, where he was really Leadbeater who invented the idea of hydrogen having two isotopes of deuterium and tritium, because he saw them. In fact, he called deuterium occultium and drew pictures of what it looked like with a neutron plus a proton.
Right.
Before anybody knew anything about it, he did that I've seen the book in 1898. He was talking about isotopic hydrogen. And so you can describe things far beyond what you're able to see. My vision is very poor, as you may know, but that doesn't interfere with my doing, for example, intuitive diagnosis, describing what it looks like inside a person's body, what's the matter with them, even at a great distance. Now, I'm not a spiritual healer, so don't write to me and ask to be healed. There are people, Judith Orloff and Mona Lisa Schultz, are physicians and have written books about intuitive diagnosis. But I teach people now how to do intuitive diagnosis because it's anomalously easier.
And it's all connected, isn't it? The various aspects. The fact that you've been doing this now for well over 30 years, how good are you now? I mean, one could assume that as the years clicked by, Russell, you got very, very good, I would assume. Is that true?
I'm pretty good at some. I'm sort of a journeyman remote viewing. I mean, the practice is very good. It's like a musical ability. That anybody can learn to play a little Mozart on the piano if they practice for a few months. And I did that a few months ago. I began taking piano lessons and actually learned to play the piano much to my as I had done as a little child. But it's not going to get me to Carnegie Hall, because although I'm a diligent practicer, I don't have any talent. Similarly, with remote viewing, I've had a lot of experience, and I'm sort of a journeyman remote viewing. My kids used to call me for lost homework and lost car keys, and even people have called me for lost valuable things. But I'm not in the class of Joe McMonagall or Pat Price or Hella Hammett or Gary Langford or the other, because what I'm lacking is talent. I'm skillful, and I'm a powerful teacher, because I can motivate people and tell them exactly what to do, but I'm not particularly talented in that regard. Now, I'm surprised at how easy intuitive diagnosis is. And I talk about intuitive diagnosis in Limitless Mind and The End of Suffering because it pertains to both transcendent knowing and transcendent doing.
Why would it be easier? Why would it be easier?
Well, I talked to Judith Orloff, who's a physician, a well-known remote viewer. You've probably talked with Judith.
Sure have, yeah.
She feels that it's, first of all, you have the heart-to-heart connection. She's a very heartful person. And you care more about helping to heal the sick person than finding the bunny rabbit in the envelope or the stuffed animal in the box.
Right.
So it's a more meaningful task. And also, there's more of a resonance between you and the other person. Says your body actually resonates with the other person. For example, there's great data about psychic functioning between identical twins, far beyond what you get between ordinary people, even when they're psychic. There are wonderful stories about things that identical twins have shared. Where they have the same job and even marry women of the same name.
Sure.
And when they went, their famous twin brothers named Jim, who are both firemen, and before they went to Minneapolis to be investigated as Twin Cities, they both built a circular wooden bench around a tree. It was like something out of, Encounters of the Third Kind. Where the guy had to build a pile of mashed potatoes in
his
living room.
Yeah, exactly, and he kept carving the top off.
So kind of uncanny connection between identical twins, I think, pertains to the idea that it's easier to do intuitive diagnosis. Now, it helps to learn some anatomy and physiology if you're going to do intuitive diagnosis so you can describe what you're looking at. But
you know,
there's
Russ,
no doubt that anybody can learn to look into the distance and look into the future.
Yet some people are better than others. Why is that?
Well, I think we don't know why. I mean, it's a musical ability. Why can Horowitz play the piano better than I can? I'd like
exactly.
to do that as
okay.
well. And it's a gift. It's a difference in brain structure. And we don't know. Why is Bobby Fischer a greater chess player than thousands of other people who would like to be Bobby Fischer? People just are born with gifts, and we don't know how the fine structure works that causes them. I mean, Joe McMonagall is far and away the most capable remote viewer that any of us have ever seen, and he would be utterly unable to explain to you why that is.
Which makes him an honest person, Russell, I think.
He is an honest person. Honest, ethical, good person to work with.
When we come back at the top of the hour, let's talk about The End of Suffering, because this is an incredible book. I have felt, Russell, that so many people at this point in our lives, right about now, are fighting with themselves. So many people are not happy. So many people are internally suffering. And maybe you can help them a little bit. Do you feel that same feeling that I'm feeling about people?
Absolutely. People are extremely wrapped up with their... I gave up riding my motorcycle, which I'd done for 35 years, because people are just becoming less courteous and more in a hurry and more aggressive.
All right. Stay with us, Russell. We'll be back in a moment. Russell's website is... ESPResearch.com. It's linked up. It's very easy for you to just go to coasttocoastam.com. You can get right to him, and as he said, he'll take your emails as well. I'll be back.